Hey guys, Jim Cox, and I'm here today with an interview with Amanda Mikesell. She's a longtime friend. We have a lot of common interests, including Ram Dass and spirituality. And she, over the past year, has gone through a really dramatic experience with cancer. And, you know, I was fortunate enough that she shared that on Facebook. And, you know, she's here to kind of share her story, her journey. And Amanda, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to start talking about my journey in the right way. As you know, I briefly started to share my journey and realized how vulnerable I felt by sharing, and I recognized right away it was just too much, that I needed to sort of go back inside and allow myself to have the experience before sharing it. So I'm grateful that you opened this pathway for me to share.
No, that's, you know, I really got a lot out of when you would post videos throughout the process. And so just to share a little bit about what exactly happened to you? It was what, breast cancer?
It was, yeah. It actually was a very aggressive form known as triple negative breast cancer. Hmm. It used to be very rare. Now it is almost very common that younger women are getting this form of breast cancer.
Is there an explanation for that? Like, why is that happening more now than it did in the past?
I think that you'll get mixed answers depending on who you ask that question to. My intuition tells me, and my intellect also tells me, that it is the life choices that we have made and also our parents have made. I won't go too far down this rabbit hole, but we know things are passed on to us in the womb, you know, our parents' choices, our ancestors' choices. And I think it's just been building over time. Mm. Because now if you look at the cancer statistics, the age group that's increasing the fastest and who are getting more aggressive cancers are the 20 to 40 year olds right now. So if you start to trace some things back, both biologically and environmentally, there's been a lot of rapid changes to our lifestyle, to what we eat, what we do, what we surround ourselves with. And I think that we were never really truly made to evolve that quickly with all of the things that we're giving ourselves, all the stimulation, all the more chemical foods, right? Does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, that plus, as you mentioned that statistic with the 20 to 40 year olds, that makes me think, and you mentioned environmental. I mean, how many of us grew up in, you know, housing developments that used to be farmland, that used to be covered with glyphosates and whatnot? And so, you know, when you end up building houses on former farmland that has been polluted, a lot of people like, oh, look, it's a new house sprung up. That, what a great thing. And then they go send the kids to play in the yard with, you know, there's almost no consideration for what was there before. I think there's, and I think that in that way, you can also see that as affecting autism rates, you know, increased autism. And so, but it's interesting, the increase in that particular age group, there has to be something more unique that makes that more aggressive. So that's interesting. Just to let you know, I mean, one of the reasons that this story really affects me is I lost my mom when she was 42. You know, she smoked two packs a day and she died of lung cancer, you know, very rapidly, like within 6 months, she was diagnosed and then she passed away. And, you know, it was pretty traumatic. I mean, I was in probably my 20s at the time. And, you know, there are elements of that that I actually, don't remember. And the only reason that I'm able to recover some of the memories is in talking to my brother. I'm like, did this actually happen? And he's like, yeah, we were doing this and this on the swing. And like, don't you remember? I'm like, it's completely blocked out. It's very traumatic. So, you know, to experience what you're going through in some way for me was very therapeutic, like how you dealt with it and how you, not just in terms of the illness, but in terms of the spirituality and in terms of being able to look at things in terms of being more positive and loving and just embracing something that could have been, you know, much worse end result, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, there was no choice. Like, yeah. And I tell people this often, I don't really allow myself to have a choice to look at things without the light being present. I try not to, try very hard to not really jump to make a decision on anything really, unless I felt into it with, I know this sounds cliche, but with love and light. So it makes my decision-making process a lot slower these days, but I've found that slow isn't always a bad thing. It's actually turns out it's pretty good for me, and it works out. But there was really no choice. And that doesn't mean that there weren't really dark days, because there were a lot of dark days. But that was for sure, my practice was to learn how to find grace and to see the positivity and the light in that darkness, and remember that darkness is only an enhancement of what's on the other side of that, which is the light.
So, you know, in terms of like, I'm listening to you use this language, it's very reminiscent of what Ram Dass shared in terms of his experience, in terms of seeing his stroke, his grace. And is that kind of some of the lesson that you took from the lessons from Ram Dass?
Yeah, 100%. I joke around, but I actually feel pretty serious about it. There's a lot of him that lives inside of me, a lot of his energetic makeup, mm-hmm. his pranic body that lives inside of me. And also, you know, most people I think have heard the name Maharaji. And so I just really pull into my strength as I'm navigating through my experiences, which in itself, going through this really big traumatic shift in my life, made me rely more and more on my spirituality, my teachers, whether they're still in the body or they're not in the body. And it really allowed me to see those lessons that we hear in the lectures or in the books. I was able to see those lessons firsthand in my own journey.
And I would imagine we were talking before, right before we started, that as you watch those lessons or hear those lessons again and again, that over time they change as your experience changes. So it's like, oh, I've listened to this 100 times. How did I miss that nugget of insight?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And then I also think for myself, the more I listen to these lectures, when I tend to hear something instead of with my mind and more with my heart, there's usually an intention that it's going to happen within my reality within the next day, maybe the next hour. It's been happening. Manifestations have been happening that quickly for me. So I truly believe that, you know, once you're in alignment with the divine purpose for your existence and your karmic path, that it's almost like a well-oiled wheel. It just sort of continues to flow and flow forward.
That's beautiful. So, I mean, What is your divine purpose then? Did you kind of distill that over the experience of the past year? I mean, how long has it been? Has it been about a year that you've been going through this?
Yeah, my diagnosis was last May, and then they actually confirmed it on June 2nd. So we are approaching very quickly the year anniversary of that for myself. And I'm sorry, what was the question? What is your, my divine purpose?
Yeah,
my divine purpose. So absolutely, 100%. If I back up just a little bit, I actually got my start in yoga teaching more therapeutic yoga. So, and then I ended up getting certified and stamped and sealed as a yoga therapist with emphasis on overcoming PTSD, depression, anxiety, and addiction. So that's how my classes, or what my classes used to look like. I was teaching at crisis centers. I was teaching at VA clinics. I was teaching at counselors' offices, and really working with people in that way.
Well, that sounds like a divine mission in itself. I mean, you were obviously already well along the path, so.
Yeah. And, you know, I was only able to give that because that's what yoga and the path did for me once I hopped on that mat or hopped on that train, if you will. And then later, and with time, that evolved into what we sort of relate a regular yoga teacher doing, running all over the place, teaching 4 to 5 classes a week, really diving into a physical practice, which led me to several teachers, which now over time, I'm doing more yoga therapy-like things, not only for clients, but for yoga teachers, existing yoga teachers, and enhancing their practice, taking them to the next step in their practice. So it's been a beautiful evolution. But within this process, I started going to Gibbs Cancer Center. It's an amazing brand new facility. It has the potential to be one of the finest cancer centers, I think, in the US. And I noticed that they were missing some elements. They were missing the integrative medicine center. They were missing the supportive or the palliative care services. It was just pretty much cut and dry. You walk in, you see your oncologist, you meet with your nurse navigator, you go to chemo, you go to radiation, blah, blah, blah. And during all of these appointments, my doctors, my nurses, the physical therapists, the whoever you name it, were just so impressed by how I could rebound, or I could snap back, and my attitude. They were curious about the chanting I was doing while receiving chemotherapy. And I really just sort of lit a fire in the cancer center. And they were like, what is this? And so I just started spreading the good word of yoga, meditation, blah, 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 blah. And they all were like, yes, yes, yes. So here they have.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And so here they have this integrative center there on the second floor, which is totally being underutilized. The only thing they have is massage therapy and physical therapy. And I just kept talking, okay, let's bring yoga. Let's bring meditation. I'll do it. I'll get it started. And I just got the email yesterday that I will be starting in June at first bringing yoga, meditation, and stress relief techniques there. And I believe in my heart that it will manifest and turn into something much more, like perhaps running the integrative center.
That's awesome. High five.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Jai Ma. So.
Wow. That's beautiful. That's amazing. That is Maharaji at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is my divine purpose. I believe that my divine purpose is to help people who might not otherwise get the opportunity. I get to teach them how to tap into their own self-healing mechanisms and help just step onto their own path. I believe that the work that I've done on myself creates a safe place for people or beings to be open and be vulnerable and start to shed those layers of themselves that are preventing their way of the path or their way of healing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that, you know, it's such a frightening experience, and people, even if they are already spiritual, you can get sidetracked into depression, you know, I would imagine pretty easily. So, you know, to have something there as far as a reminder and, you know, an outlet of other avenues to just bring in more positive energy, you know, has to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I try not to say good or bad. That's one of the practices that I'm working with right now, is to remain sort of in that neutral space. Because I really do feel like at least the reality that I live in, we are avoiding bad and rushing and seeking good all the time, when I think it should be almost the other way around. We should seek and reflect on what we label as bad so that we can shift it to good.
That's interesting.
That's something that I'm working on. And so just to reference, you know, what you were saying, how it was a good thing. I think it's just kind of a thing that I would like to see start to come to fruition across the board, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of cutting out these ideas of what's good and what's bad and being more present to just what is. I think when we look past what's in front of us, the mind gets involved and the mind wants to start to analyze, oh, this is good, oh, this is bad. And that's how we open the door for the mind to lead us instead of it being our servant.
It's interesting. So the analyzing of whether something is good or bad ends up being a distraction from just what is, and accepting and pushing through no matter what, whether it's good or bad. That's interesting. What role did diet play in terms of like your going through the past year, like recovery? I would imagine like even before then you were eating fairly healthy before, you know, the diagnosis. So what role did diet play in terms of your healing process?
Okay. That was one of the things that I honestly struggled with. And by struggle, I mean, before coming to this path, yes, 80% of the time, I'm going to say 80%, that might be a little generous, but 80% of the time, I'm a clean eater. You know, organic, I do meat sparingly, I prefer fresh or raw, maybe just lightly blanched foods. So I was about 80% pretty clean. Now that hasn't been my whole life. That's primarily been very strict over the last 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. But I am the sweets lover, okay? And I really do love food. I have this pleasure button that is hit when I go out to dinner and I get to try new concoctions and new flavors. And, you know, that's a great joy for me, is food. And then being on this path, I've also just sort of accepted and learned that it's a great gift and a great blessing to be able to share food, you know, with friends and family and blah, 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 blah. So I don't always eat perfect, and I do allow myself to splurge at times. And that looks very different at different times in my life. But when I got the diagnosis, my first instinct was, oh my gosh, I have to completely change my diet. What do I do? No, absolutely no sugar. Got to do this, got to do that. And I completely overwhelmed myself with allowing a flood of information, which nothing out there was very clear or straightforward. Mm-hmm. And there was this diet and that diet, blah, blah, blah. But I let myself become overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So I jumped on this keto diet, which absolutely made me the biggest grouch ass I think I've been in the last like couple of years. I mean, it just like, I was not pleasant to be around at all. And I'm like, this can't be how I start or set the tone for this journey.
Yeah.
There's gotta be some balance. So I then jumped on a Facebook group that had more than 50,000 breast cancer people on it. And I started reaching out to, I think, in my opinion, the best people that would know the most, which are women who have gone through it. Women, and there were a few men, actually. And I started asking them about their diet and what they changed. And you know what? A lot of them that have survived 10, 12, 15, 20 years, their honest opinion was, or the consensus was, that yes, they shifted to a healthier diet, of which I was already on, but they allowed themselves to have the cheesecake when they go on date night, or they have the birthday cake or the ice cream cone. They just don't do it all the time. And they watch, you know, where their sources of food and what they're consuming and how they're consuming. You know, it's kind of like that thing where you eat so much or too much that you fill your stomach and now all of your digestive systems have slowed down and you feel the repercussions a few days later. That's a big thing once you have cancer to not do. You want to find that nice balance where everything is flowing through you, because ultimately these bodies are like filtration systems for our experience, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that seems to be a big element. But nobody really like gave up anything that I wasn't already doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? I went back to what I was doing and I got a heck of a lot happier, which allowed me to focus on other lessons and downloads and things that were coming to me or things that I was experiencing.
But the thing you were earlier, just to reinforce, was mainly a plant-based diet.
Yes, mainly a plant-based diet. Yes, I do allow myself to eat meat very sparingly. My body will tell me when I need it. I listen to it. And I do eat a little bit of fish and a little bit of beef, a little bit of chicken, but that's just about it. But I am very, very careful and very mindful of the sources. And if I can, I do prefer to use meat from those regenerative farms who are mindful about the land.
Gotcha. What, I know that one of the videos that you shared at the beginning that of the journey, like one of the concerns was finances. Like how do you deal with this disease, because it gets to be so expensive to treat it? And what was your experience? I know that you'd mentioned the facility that you had went to was able to work out some sort of a program with you, but I mean, you look around the United States and obviously this is a huge issue. I mean, if I came down with cancer, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to afford it, you know? And like, how did you deal with that aspect of it?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I'm going to tell you that when the finances came up and my insurance was denied and I had all of these issues, I felt into my heart and I was told by my higher self to remember a mantra that I used very consistently for 3 years in a row. That mantra, that prayer was, I surrender, I trust, I love. And I went back to that immediately. And so I started doing that, and it was on day 5 that a nurse navigator called me completely out of the blue and said, hello, Amanda, I am your nurse navigator. I am here to help you with finances, with stress management, all the things that your doctor can't help you with. Wow. What can I be of service of? And I said, I need help with my finances. And she said, let's do this. So based on my income, I make roughly around $40,000 a year doing yoga and doing this yoga therapy thing. So we all know that doesn't necessarily go far, but I was paying for my own insurance, and I was spending about $300 a month on insurance that didn't really amount to anything. So she had me fill out this paperwork, and it was for government-based insurance. We know this as Medicaid. Okay. In the state of South Carolina, and I'm not sure that it's available in every state, but in the state of South Carolina, because South Carolina has a very high rate of cancer, they offer a Medicaid that's specifically for certain kinds of cancer. Mine obviously being breast, they offer a breast and ovarian cancer Medicaid program that once I eliminated my expenses off of or away from the $40,000 I make a year, put me into a bracket that I qualified for this assistance. The assistants then charged me $66 a month, but it covered absolutely almost everything for my cancer journey.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow is right. The only thing that it wasn't covering was, like, I know I shared with you guys a few times how I went into the hospital and had to stay in the hospital because the chemotherapy killed my blood and my immune system. It didn't pay for that. But however, remember that little angel that was sent to me, the nurse navigator, she helped me get on this program called the Bearden-Josie program, which it's a local program. And it's a part of the hospital and the cancer center that I am using. It's specifically for the added extra expenses that cancer causes. And so out of this fund, they were able to help me pay for the bulk of these expenses. I am responsible for 30%. So what that looks like in a number scale is my entire journey was estimated to be around $4 million.
Jesus.
By the time this is said and done, I will only owe about $32,000, of which I've been able to start making payments. And they've allowed me to make payments whatever I can afford. As long as I'm paying something, it doesn't affect your credit or, you know, whatever else is out there, that monitoring system. So again, I surrender.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I surrender, I trust, I love. So
that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I know that from the treatment, I mean, you had a lot of chemotherapy, a lot of radiation treatments. You mm-hmm. also ended up having a double mastectomy. Mm-hmm. Are you going to do breast reconstruction as well, or is that not part of the journey?
So at this time, I am not wanting any sort of reconstruction. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for the future, but my intuition tells me that it's just not for me. We're hearing a lot about that, that breast implant disease that a lot of women are developing. And I personally have a few friends who have removed their breast implants because of the disease. And I also have a client, a very close client of mine. She's in her 60s. She's had her silicone breast implants for over 30 years, and they just removed them. And I wish I had a picture to show you and to show everyone what they looked like. Mm-hmm. The silicone that was once clear in that breast implant was green and black.
Wow.
And the capsule that they used to enclose the breast implant in first before sticking it in, that was almost completely black. Wow. When they removed it from her.
Wow. So yeah, that's a lot of toxicity in the body.
Correct. And so I really have no desire. I believe that source, that God has given me this experience for a reason, and a part of accepting my experience is also accepting the transformation that my physical form has gone through, which means I no longer have breasts. And within that, not having breasts and being a woman and whatever, that in itself has its own set of lessons and understandings and revelations that are coming currently, and that I'm sure will continue to come. And, you know, I feel very strongly that these lessons are given to me so I can put a voice to them and share them with others.
I agree. And I mean, part, and it goes along with the idea of just embracing the now as things are, right? And not putting too much thought and too much, you know, trying to set a course, you know, just embracing the now and moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So if you were to offer any advice to somebody who does get a diagnosis of cancer, like what would your advice be?
I don't have any advice, to be honest with you, because I do believe that it's such a personal journey to go through, not only cancer, but any sort of health issue. Mm-hmm. Everybody's experiences are very unique. And the only thing that comes up for me when you ask me that question is to learn to trust your heart and to have faith in something bigger than this body, than this experience. And some people might not understand, that might not resonate with them. Some people it might click with right away. But it's funny that you ask me that, because there is now another yoga instructor within our studio that has developed a very aggressive and even more progressed cancer than my own.
Wow.
And I witnessed myself when I found out, wanting to flood her with information and be like, do this, this is what I did. And she was not receiving it well, because her state of being wasn't the same as my state of being. And I was able to see that right away, that she's still processing at a different level and isn't ready to process that. So I think that that's the best advice, is that maybe there isn't the best advice out there, that we really should embrace that everybody is meant to have their own experiences. Mm-hmm. But if there are things that I would recommend to people with their diagnosis, is number one, to take time to sit in stillness and silence, to reflect and gather and center yourself. Because centering yourself is almost absolutely necessary, because the Cancer journey moves like this. It's very fast. It's very right now. Let's do this. Let's do this. We're doing this. We're doing that. We're doing this.
And this is stuff that's coming from elsewhere that is pushing you. It's like jumping into a river and just being carried away by the tide of it, right?
Correct. And you just have to be ready to ride that river, right?
Yeah.
So being very centered or very grounded and empty, right? And what I mean by empty is, you know, really allowing your emotions to be brought to the surface, but not so much affected by them. So that way you're empty, so that you can just push through each of these experiences that are happening very quickly along the river, right?
And just take it day by day and step by step, being present instead of trying to get five steps ahead.
Yeah. And then the other thing is to trust. So to get centered, and then to trust your doctors. And if you don't, get new doctors, you know, to trust your body, to trust that everything you've gone through prior to this has led you to this moment, and trust that you have everything that you need. And if you can just maybe look around and take a step back, find something bigger picture, what you need might be within, you know, your arm's reach. Just trust, really trust in the process, in the journey, and in yourself. And that's a lot easier said than done. I know that.
That's
I know
beautiful.
That hurts too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. So that's the best I got.
That's perfect. It's all perfect. If people want to connect to you and learn more, how can they connect to you? I guess on Facebook is the best way.
Yep, on Facebook. I do have an Instagram, but I try to stay away from all the different social medias and all of the outlets and platforms that we have. So I'm really only make myself available on Facebook or Instagram. And my Facebook is just Amanda Mikesell, and my Instagram is actually backwards. It's Mikesell Amanda.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to connect and share. Again, it was a privilege for me to be able to, that you shared, you know, all of this over the past year and as you go forward, because, you know, it's empowering and it's healing, you know, and it's good to be able to get perspective in a different way. And, you know, we all have curriculum that we're going through, but you know, the honor is that you share your curriculum with us, and it enriches everybody else's lives. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome. You're very welcome.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.